Andrew Boga joins us on Sports Byline USA, 7-foot center for the Golden State Warriors, and he was taken as the first overall pick in the 2005 NBA draft by the Bucks, and he is the first Australian player to be drafted number one overall. Andrew, I was reading a story about you. You have a fascination with cars, and I guess that goes back to your dad being involved with them, does it not?
Yeah, a little bit. Kind of grew up around them and always had an appreciation of, if I saw a nice car, I'd always, appreciated and always dreamt about owning a nice car one day. So, definitely.
Yeah, I know the story said that you have 36 cars. Now, a lot of people are going to say, just one of those athletes spending a lot of money for play toys, but that's not the case with you. Explain to people what those cars are.
I've got everything from cars that are, worth $10,000 to a little bit more pricey, but they're all older, mainly American muscle cars, a couple of Australian muscle cars in there, and I kind of just buy cars that need a little bit of work predominantly, and obviously have a couple of collector's items, but yeah, that's generally pretty decent investments if you can hang on to them for a number of years.
You and your dad, did you used to hang around the garage and work on cars together?
I didn't. I was outside the garage shooting on the hoop attached to the garage, so I wasn't spending too much time in there. But obviously, he was.
Growing up in Australia, I've spent some time down there. I love the people and I love their demeanor toward life. Tell me a little bit about your growing up.
Yeah, I mean it's a real laid back country. I grew up, in working class suburb, and parents were both working class people that worked, had their own business, and grew up like any other, normal kid today, and worked my way up to become a good basketballer. But obviously had some good times and tough times. The recession in Australia in the early 90s when it was really bad, and I remember struggling to, have food on the table and stuff like that. But then also had some good years too. So obviously it was, it's a part of me. It's where I've grown up, where my bloodline runs through. But, it's obviously a great place to go back to every summer too.
I know it said that you had a couple of months as a gymnast. Somehow I can't picture that. I can't get my mind around that, Andrew.
Yeah, I got forced into that one because my sister took that up at an early age, and I was about 5 or 6 when I had so much energy in the house. My parents decided to have me take up a sport, and I got kind of guilty by association because my sister did it. I had to do it, and then after they realized I hated it, I got out of it pretty quickly.
One thing I do know about kids is that when there is a child who is kind of different from the other kids, maybe taller than the other kids, bigger than the other kids, they have to deal with an awful lot. Did you have to deal with that growing up?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I still do to this day. Obviously, as an adult, it's easy to deal with. I couldn't really care, but as a kid, it's hard. People staring at you and pointing and always asking you, how tall you are, making fun of you, and it's a cruel world when you're a kid, but obviously makes you tougher and got me in a fair few fights too.
One of the other things that you were interested in was Australian rules football. Now, I have seen a great deal of Australian rules football, and to me, they get the most respect of any athlete because to go out there and butt heads the way they do and play that game the way they do, they are pretty tough hombres. Tell everybody about that game.
Yeah, I think it's probably the toughest sport in the world, by my opinion, not just being biased, but it's a sport where you need to have a capacity of endurance that's very high. You need to be able to run for short bursts, full speed. The point of contact comes at 360 degrees. There's no line of scrimmage, so you don't know where you need to hit from, and it ends up being around about 25-30 minute quarters, four quarters. So it's a pretty intense game. That's why it's only played once a week. What they put themselves through is absolutely phenomenal, and I'm obviously a big fan of it.
Do you think that tough kind of mentality that you saw in that in Australian rules football is something that you kind of embraced as a basketball player?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I play the game that way a little bit. I take a lot of charges and put my body on the line a lot of times, and that's how I was taught to play the game. So it kind of is just the mentality, I think, not so much with Australian rules football, but just as Australian in general, is if you're going to do something, have a crack at it and give it your best.
I talked to Bob Lanier one time, the Hall of Famer, and he said to me, Ron, he said, I'm actually a guard in a center's body. And I've always felt that big men always wanted to be little men, and probably little guys wanted to be big guys. Was that the case with you? Because when you were young and when you were about 13 years old, you were a 5'8 guard, were you not?
Yeah, correct. Which definitely helped my skills as a big fella. And, I think all big guys, like you said, all big guys want to be small and small guys want to be big. I definitely like to to throw some nice passes every now and then, and I get a big thrill out of throwing a nice assist to somebody for a dunk. So I guess I've got some guard genes in me.
You ended up at in the United States at Utah, and Rick Majerus was your coach there. I've known Rick for a long time. Tell me a little bit about your path to Utah, how you ended up there from Australia.
Basically, a coach in Australia that I knew for a while, that I worked with, Brian Gordon, who's basically a Hall of Fame coach, American guy, but Hall of Fame coach in Australia, and he played in the National League out there and then became a coach. I worked out with him a lot, and then he had a friend, you might know his name, called Ken Shields, who's a basketball legend in Canada, coached Canadian national team back in the day, and then he saw me, and then he was good friends with Majerus, and then it all just kind of came together, and then, you know, how the college recruiting goes, they sent a couple of assistants over immediately, and, you know, I basically signed a letter of intent within a month.
Yeah, when you took a look at American basketball, what did you think it would be like, and how was it similar to or different from what you thought, Andrew?
Well, to be honest, I didn't know much about college at all. I didn't even really know it existed, because in Australia, all we saw was the NBA. I didn't know anything about the NCAA and the ridiculous rules they have when it comes to recruiting and athletes and all that, and the way the college system worked. In Australia, it wasn't really on TV much, so you got no real exposure to it. So once I figured it out, you know, it was pretty interesting. Just remember still getting recruited by an assistant coach and going to lunch, and, you know, he couldn't even buy me a can of drink because it was illegal against NCAA rules, which I thought was pretty funny, but just one of those things.
Yeah, what is it that you can't buy a guy of Foster's, right?
Exactly right. It was it was pretty interesting. It's still to this day, NCAA to me is, you know, a very interesting organization.
Well, Rick Majerus is a special kind of guy. He really relates to his players. Was he the type of guy that you were thankful that you had as a college coach?
I mean, he was one of the greatest minds I've played for, especially defensively. But obviously, you know, wasn't a great guy to get along with. I'll just leave it at that. But as far as basketball goes, I've got wonderful things to say about the guy. He really knew. Knew the game back to front and lived and breathed it, and obviously was a stepping stone, you know, for myself to get to the NBA.
You know, Patty Mills, who also came out of Australia and is playing in the NBA as well, said one time of you, "You are the face of Australian basketball." That's an awful lot of pressure. Are you comfortable with being the face of Australian basketball?
Yeah, I've got no problem with it. I mean, obviously, you know, the numbers speak for themselves. I guess, you know, myself and Luke are probably the two best players to come out of Australia. Luke Longley, that is, you know, in the history of Australian basketball, that, you know, the things that they've done in the NBA, obviously he's done a lot more than me getting some rings, but he had a little bit of help with Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, but we're probably the two guys that have established ourselves in this league as starting caliber players. So I don't feel the pressure. I mean, I think it's an important responsibility, because Basketball Australia has taken a turn for the worst probably the last 10 years and starting to wiggle its way back up, but we've got a lot of work to do to get it back to prominence where it once was.
You've had to deal with some injuries over the last couple of seasons. How do you deal with that from a frustration standpoint, Andrew?
Oh, it was very tough. It's probably the toughest point of my career these last 3 years. Both absolutely freakish injuries that are, you know, the elbow injury that a lot of people probably saw on YouTube is a one in a million type thing, and the ankle injury to do the amount of damage I did coming down on a foot is absolutely ridiculous. So I've been pretty unlucky. Hopefully the luck will turn to the corner, and I'll have no high impact injuries or any more injuries, period, and I'll have a healthy career for the rest of my NBA life.
And also, does that play on your mind a little bit, wondering, if I do this, maybe this will happen to me? After a while, I would think it would kind of play on one's mind.
No, it won't. I mean, if it gets to the point where I'm second guessing my effort and what I'm trying to do on a basketball court, I think that's probably the last game I should play. But it does motivate me to work even more in the off season and work even harder with my rehab. And if the doctor tells me to do this once a day, I'm going to do it twice a day. And I think it's an extra motivation to come back and prove that I can get over these injuries and still be a valuable player.
We've got about a minute left, but when you think about the successful big men in professional basketball today, what is the commonality? What is the Dwight Howard? What is the Andrew Bogut? What do the big guys do successfully in basketball?
Well, I'd say it's changed a lot. I mean, the Dwight Howards are very, very rare these days. I mean, that's just a physical specimen. It's an unbelievable basketball body. He's got all the attributes you need to be a big guy in this league, a successful big guy. I'm more, you know, of the new breed probably, where, you know, you got to rely a bit more on skill and smarts. I don't have the athleticism Dwight has, and, and I can't really try to dunk over people and use my strength and power. I have to find other ways. So I think we're starting to see a lot of big men develop, you know, ball handling skills, be able to dribble, be able to shoot the ball, be able to finish with both hands, you know, and obviously be able to guard. So it's really changed.
Well, I hope you get yourself healthy. I'm looking forward to seeing you on the court with the Golden State Warriors. Thanks for your time. And when you see Patty Mills, tell him I said hello.
Will do. No worries. Cheers.
Andrew Bogut with us this hour on Sports Byline USA. 7 foot center for the Golden State Warriors now and trying to get over an injury. And I'll tell you what, he's an impressive figure on the floor. We continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on America's Sports Talk Show.